It's Sunday, May 4th, 2008.
Almost live from the Fuking Ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
Yes, this is Ragnar Danisjold. Yeah, remember me? Then you're listening to the Pirates Week podcast, serving the shortwave pirate radio community. We talk about, well, all different types of pirate radio and free media. And we have a long show for you this week. A metric ton of pirates in the news stories. And we're going to go through some relevant forum postings on the internet, including the Free Radio Network and Note Stations Log per the Free Radio Weekly. We have a couple off-air recordings for you, an expanded monthly propagation forecast, as well as the weekly forecast from This Week in Amateur Radio, and a few news stories that, although may not be pirate-related, but you also may find interesting, and summing up with a few closing thoughts from me. And as I have been absent for the last couple weeks, like I said, this is going to be a jam-packed show, so stay tuned. It's the Pirates Week.
Pirates in the news.
Well, like I said, we have a metric ton of news stories to cover this week, so let's get right into it. From last week's International Radio Report comes a mention of WNKR, that great pirate AM pirate over there in England, and a bust in the Boston area a couple weeks back. Take a quick listen to Stephen Janis's International Radio Report.
Other news, check out West and North Kent Radio, one of our favorite pirate stations across the pond in the UK. They're on weekends on medium wave on 1476 AM, 1476 medium wave in London. And you can check them out live and streaming at www.wnkr.co.nr. And a cool bunch of guys. Shout out to Andy Walker and Underground Steve. I was listening to their show this morning, and God bless them, they've been around for years and years, and have yet to be busted. Unlike some FM pirates in Boston. This comes from DXLD. In the USA, the FCC is starting to crack down on several of the high-powered pirates that have been making waves on the Boston FM dial. The commission recently issued a $10,000 notice of apparent liability against Richard Cloughton for operating Big City FM on 101.3, from Blue Hill Avenue. The high power pirate at 96.5 operating from Montello Avenue in Brockton received the FCC warning earlier this month as well. It says, will the visits from the commission have any effect on the increased level of pirate activity in the town? Scott Fibush wrote this in Northeast Radio Watch April 21st via DX Listener's Digest. And someone mentioned here found that they busted the FM pirates and the AM pirates on the X band, the expanded band, or in the same areas. Now, I wonder why they choose the FM pirates and not the expanded band pirates.
Hmm, that is interesting.
Any ideas on that? Are they easier to find, you think?
Hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe because the FM pirates are chipping away at the commercial stations and the FM is the big money band.
Huh. Could be. Okay, I am trying to cue this.
It's usually about money.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
With interference as a, you know, as a BS front. Oh, they're causing interference. Really, someone's losing money.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Well, we're going to have a little bit more this week from Stephen Janis's International Radio Report. But first, let's take a listen to World of Radio. Seems to be a new pirate on the shortwave bands down in Brazil. Take a listen to World of Radio about this new Brazilian pirate.
There's also a pirate in Brazil calling itself Radio Livre, or Free Radio, which says it transmits starting at midnight local time, early on Saturdays and Sundays. That means 0300 UT Saturdays and Sundays on 7695. Power is said to be only 50 watts. Oh, yes, the name of the station is Cidade Olgis, which means City Velhos.
Well, this next item, I believe I got from Dr. Tim's Pirate Radio News Group It is via the frandx.blogspot.com. Links, of course, will be in all these news stories will be on the website. But and this is going to be translated from a foreign language site. So he goes on to say, sad news. I just received this communication from the man behind Radio Baritana International Project. The original is in Catalan, as usual. So anyways, it seems that a PTT man, which is kind of like the FCC here in the United States, was visiting his home and saying to close down because the station was interfering with some French maritime station. A new visit on Monday the 5th of May, just at 9 a.m., is foreseen to put a seal strap on the Yaesu FT-757 GX transceiver. Also, he said that no fine was issued at the moment because the positive collaboration of the operator. An alternative project must be in the mind of the operator. Feel free to send your condolences and solidarity to Radio RadioBarritina at hotmail.com. Seems like this European pirate has been asked to leave the airwaves due to some maritime interference. This is links, of course, will be in the show notes. And from the San Gabriel Tribune comes a story about Ontario's pirates of yore. Gary Whitehead, author of the new book The Diamond Mind, which is credited by his old radio name Jim Diamond. It takes a look back to Ontario's radio pirates of the mid-1960s, such as KTXX AM and KHWA FM. I'll have links to it. It's The Diamond Mind, a new book out about Ontario, Canada's radio pirates of the mid-1960s. And from the Media Geek website, this is actually a couple weeks old now, but a story says the Monk, the captain of the original but departed Boulder Free Radio, that's Boulder, Colorado, observed the apparent resurrection of his name. The new captain says, "Pirate radio lives on in Boulder. We may go by another name or on different frequencies. We may broadcast live on the air or streaming over the internet or both. We may do it from our homes, our vehicles, businesses, parties, local bars, who knows. Some days we don't do anything at all and the air is filled only with static. Other days, however, we bring voices of music from other citizens of Boulder and from around the country and the world." Well, the first iteration of KBFR was infamous in micropower circles as maintaining a clever and long-running game of cat and mouse with the FCC that lasted years. Well, Monk finally shut the station down in 2005 after being hunted down and busted by the FCC. It seems that someone else has taken up the mantle and is now broadcasting Radio Free Boulder, or Boulder Free Radio. Very cool. And lastly, from this week's International Radio Report, actually came out just about an hour ago, is a story of a California pirate that had a run-in with the FCC, and, well, after pleading his case, he was only fined $100. That's a pretty small fine. Take a listen to Stephen Janis on their International Radio Report.
Yeah, right now we have a thing on enforcement. Compassionate FCC fines unlicensed broadcaster only $100. What happened there? Well, we're going to tell you exactly what happened. The FCC has shown a lot of compassion as it issued and affirmed a monetary forfeiture in the amount of only $100 to Dwayne Simon of California. This for operating an unlicensed radio transmitter on 95.9 in Lancaster area. Simon had originally been issued a notice of apparent liability in the amount of $10,000. This following a December 30th, 2006 visit by FCC agents from the Enforcement Bureau Los Angeles office. During their visit, the agents interviewed Simon and inspected the station. During the questioning, Simon acknowledged that he was aware of the commission's requirement for a license to broadcast. He also said that he was aware of the commission's enforcement efforts against other pirate broadcasters in the Lancaster area. Before leaving, the agents issued an on-scene notice of unlicensed operation to Simon. At the end of the interview, Simon told the agents that he would not operate the station again and indicated that he would pursue an internet-based radio station as an alternative. But Simon apparently did not keep that promise. On April 6, 2007, Los Angeles agents again visited Simon and inspected his station. Simon again acknowledged operating the unlicensed station on 95.9. On June 18th, 2007, the Los Angeles office issued a notice of apparent liability in the amount of $10,000 to Simon. In his response, Simon did not dispute the facts outlined in the proposed fine. Instead, he apologized for his actions and stated that he had dismantled his transmitter. He also asserted an inability to pay the forfeiture and supplied personal financial information to support his claim. The FCC says that in analyzing Simon's financial hardship claim, that it found it to be true and warranted a reduction in the amount of the fine. In this case, to the amount of $100, which Simon was given 30 days to pay or to file a further appeal.
Breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law.
The FRN Forum postings.
Well, with that, it's time now to take a look around the internet to see some of the more relevant postings on some of the more relevant websites, starting off like we always do with the Free Radio Network, www.frn.net/vines. Cracker starts us off this week with a news flash. Pound Pirate Radio on the Zerk Net is alive and well. He's registered it himself and is running the board over there. And if you want to join him, you can reports and real-time loggings. And he says he's going to run a tight ship, so climb on board. That's Pound Pirate Radio on the Zerk Network. Haven't been there yet, but I intend to. I've been pretty busy, but we'll get into that at the end of the show, maybe. And anyways, Pound Pirate Radio on the Zerk Net, running by Cracker. Radio Maple Leaf posts an awesome tool for ionospheric modeling. Live ionospheric modeling for Google Earth. NASA released a 4D model of the ionosphere that plugs into Google Earth. They are updating the data every 10 minutes or so, so it's almost real time, every 10 minutes. You really want to check it out. It's the 24-hour MUF movie loops are really revealing. Very worth the time if you got Google Earth. Actually, Today at NASA also covered this topic and probably is not butchering as much as I am right now, so take a listen to Today at NASA.
Today, NASA-funded researchers released to the general public a new four-dimensional live model of Earth's ionosphere. Without leaving home, anyone can fly through the layer of ionized gas that encircles Earth at the edge of space itself, seeing this dynamic region of space weather as it is right now. All that's required is a connection to the Internet. The ionosphere is important to pilots, ham radio operators, Earth scientists, and even soldiers. Using this new 4D tool, they can monitor and study the ionosphere as if they're actually inside it. The ionosphere is, in a sense, our planet's final frontier. It is the last wisp of Earth's atmosphere that astronauts leave behind when they enter space. The realm of the ionosphere stretches from about 50 to 500 miles above Earth's surface, where the atmosphere thins to near vacuum and exposes itself to the full fury of the sun. Solar ultraviolet radiation breaks apart molecules and atoms, creating a globe-straddling haze of electrons and ions. Ham radio operators know the ionosphere well. They can communicate over the horizon by bouncing their signals off at the bottom of the ionosphere, or communicate not at all when a solar flare blasts the ionosphere with X-rays and triggers a radio blackout. Understanding the ionosphere, well, it's clearly important. That's why NASA's Living with a Star program funded this work, says Guhatha Kurta, the Living with a Star program scientist. Space Environment Technologies Incorporated of California received the Living with a Star grant, and they partnered with Space Environment Corporation of Utah and the U.S. Air Force to develop the four-dimensional ionosphere. The best way to appreciate the 4D ionosphere is to try it, says W. Kent Tabishka, president of Space Environment Technologies and chief scientist of its Space Weather Division. He offers these instructions. 1. Download and install Google Earth. 2. Visit our website and click on the link, Total Electron Content. Wait for the file to load, and presto, you're flying through the ionosphere. Colors represent electron content, Tabisca explains. Bright red is high density. That's where radio communications are restricted to few or no frequencies. Blue denotes low density. No big problem there. Using the intuitive Google Earth interface, users can fly above, around, and through these regions, getting a true 3D view of the situation. Make that 4D. The fourth dimension is time. This is a real-time system updated every 10 minutes, he says. The 4D model can be fun and even a little addictive. The proper name of the system is CAPS, short for Communication Alert and Prediction System. Earth-orbiting satellites feed the system up-to-the-minute information on solar activity. The measurements are then converted to electron densities by physics-based computer codes. It's important to note, says Tabisca, that CAPS reveals the ionosphere not only as it is right now, but also as it is going to be in the near future. Forecasting is a key aspect of the model, he says.
Well, continuing on with Pirate Shortwave over at the Free Radio Network, the poet posts about crystal malfunctions. He says he has one FT-243 crystal, metal-faced, and definitely made for transmitting. With it, the transmitter tunes up fine in CW, full plate voltage, saturation normal, but as soon as he throws a switch over to AM, he loses grid voltage. He have no plate voltage and basically has to start the tune-up process all over. So I asked, what could possibly be up with that? Doesn't happen with any other crystals that he's tried. And Andy Yoder started a topic about how we feel about our transmitters. Actually, I thought this topic would quickly devolve into, well, a couch session of sorts as we open up about our rigs, but actually it's pretty entertaining over there. Over in the workshop forum, Sealord asks about ground screens and asks, does anyone have any experience using screen-type mesh or similar material for grounding? Well, his idea is to bury a mesh a few inches under the soil around each vertical and have the different pieces soldered together to form a large plane along with the existing ground rods. 807B mentions that the screen will be susceptible to corrosion. JTA says ground rods need to be farther apart than they are long to have a beneficial effect. Thus, an 8-foot ground rod will have to be more than 8 feet away from the last rod. These act like resistors in parallel, reducing the resulting resistance. And bentonite is better than salt for seeding the ground for better conductivity. Texas Pete says, even better than the bentonite is the GEM material. GEM material is used in some common commercial grounding applications. If you want to try bentonite, check with a local drilling supply store for bentonite, as you should be able to get it pretty cheap. It's sold by the locals as hole plug. It's, people for well drilling use it to plug holes. And over in the Pirate Operators Exchange, Jackhammer asks how people like the programming of WFMQ. He would like to know more thoughts about the program and audio quality. Well, Lex replied that the audio quality was good and punchy, just right for a rock music on shortwave sideband, and suggested theme-oriented music and programs for content. Uncle John says any show that he can pick up is a good show. Just point your antenna farms towards the left coast and crank up the power. He's over there, I believe he's in Washington State, and doesn't hear a lot, man. So hopefully John over there on the west coast, or the, as he puts it, the left coast, can hear a little more. And actually, I think that's really cool of Jackhammer of WFMQ to put that out there on the Pirate Operators Exchange to ask his audience, what do you want me to do with my station? What do you want to hear? That's cool, and I think that's really what the Pirate Operator Exchange is meant for. Hey, over in Alt Radio Pirate, a thumping 55-watt portable amp from WSQT Gorilla Radio. WSQT posts that they have just finished testing a new power amp that makes 55 watts on 12 volts when driven with a 5-watt transmitter. It uses two dissimilar power transistors that were available at hand. One is a 20-watt UHF M9851, easily capable of 25 watts at 88 on 88 megahertz. The other is a VHF 25-watt C1946A pulled from a Marine radio set. They're totally different, even in package design, though they are both capable of 10 decibel gain and are designed for higher frequencies than the FM broadcast band. And then he goes on to link to photos and schematics of the 50-watt the 55-watt portable amp. That's from WSQT. And from the email bag comes an interesting website sent in by The Axis. It's a site where you and several other users can control an SDR. That's one of those waterfall displays. Very cool for scanning an entire portion of the band simultaneously. And each user can tune to a different frequency or even demodulation modes or bandwidth or even band. You can chat with other users online and see where each other is tuned to. It's limited to a 48 hertz section of the 40 and 80 meter bands. The receiver location is at a university in the Netherlands. This is very cool. I'll have links to it in the show notes. And it's pretty much an online radio, but the radio is actually an SDR unit. Very, very cool. And finally, from the Free Radio Weekly, number 638 of May 3rd, 2008, stations being heard this last week include Dit Da Radio, Moonshine Radio, MAC Shortwave, Northwoods Radio, The Wave, WAIR, WMPR, and Wolverine Radio.
You know the weird guy in the corner of the office who always has his headphones on? That's you!
Well, with that, it's time now to take a listen to some off-air recordings from this last week. Don't have a lot of them. Haven't been able to get on the radio, but I do have three I wish to share with you. The first one up is The Wave, 6925 Upper Sideband, recorded the 29th of April, 2130 UTC, SINPO rating of 34343, playing Rock the Boat and Somewhere Beyond the Sea. This is The Wave, 6925 Upper Sideband.
Rock the bus. The Wave.
Next up is Maple Leaf Radio, 6925 Upper Sideband, recorded May 2nd, 2345 to 2354. A really nice SINPO of 45444. And I just caught him right at sign off. This is Maple Leaf Radio, 6925 Upper Sideband.
Oh,
have been listening to Maple Leaf Radio.
And lastly, recorded by Lex, he caught KBLU on 6925, 3rd of May, around 0115, SINPO 44243 out of Fort Worth, Texas, listening with an indoor antenna. Lex caught the female voice ID, kind of a computerized female voice, but he definitely could hear, and you can hear it too, KBLU. This is KBLU, your hot rockin' blues pirate from the 1980s. Back again for you, Andrew. Do you remember? Check your logbooks. This is KBLU just for you, Andrew. And Lex wonders if this is actually a shout-out to Andrew Yoder. Very well could be. Take a listen to KBLU, recorded from an indoor antenna out of Fort Worth, Texas, by Lex.
Rock and blues pirates from the 1980s. Back again for you, Andrew.
Do you remember? Check your logbook.
This is KBLU. Just for you, Andrew.
KBLU.
This is KBLU. Your hot rock and blues pirates from the 1980s. Do you remember? Check your logbook. This is KBLU. Just for you, Andrew.
This is KBLU.
Your hot rock and blues pirates from the 1980s. Back again for you, Andrew. Do you remember? This is KBLU. This is KBLU. Your hot rock and blues pirates from the 1980s. Back again for you, Andrew. Do you remember? Check your logbook. This is KBLU. Just for you, Andrew.
The Pirates Week Podcast. Your home for shortwave pirate information. PiratesWeek.info. That's PiratesWeek.info.
Does anyone around here still have a radio? Anyone here at all? Anyone here at all?
Well, it's time now for the propagation forecast. Actually, you're going to have two of them, one after another, both from This Week in Amateur Radio. First up is the monthly propagation outlook with G0KYA, and then we're going to go right into the weekly forecast from both of them from This Week in Amateur Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the HF Propagation Report with me, Steve Nichols, G0KYA. Well, as we head into May, we've obviously lost the better conditions on the low bands in the winter. We've come through the spring equinox and we're heading towards summer. So you would think that conditions are not going to be terribly, terribly good on HF. But there's good news and bad news. Before we get on to that, I want to talk first about the current solar minimum. At the moment, it looks like the solar minimum occurred in about October last year. And predictions are that things should start to improve maybe later this year. But a big, big change or improvement about March to September 2009. So it's going to be a little while before we see the flux hitting the sort of 90s, 100s or higher that we really need for propagation to start to improve, especially on, say, 15 and 10 metres. But what is worrying at the moment, there is some talk that we could be heading for another Maunder minimum. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with what the Maunder minimum was, it was a period back in the 17th century, I think, when there was a period of about 50 years where there were no sunspots whatsoever, barely any sunspots whatsoever. Obviously, it didn't affect radio in those days, but what it did happen in that time was what we call the mini ice age. There was a mini ice age, if you like, across Europe that resulted in places like the River Thames in London freezing over, and people were able to actually skate on it. So, as I said, there's some reports that maybe we're heading to another Maunder minimum. for the next 5 or 6 years, or maybe even 50 years if you look at it like that, what would that mean for us? Well, it would mean pretty much that there would be no sunspots, no activity on 15, 12 or 10 metres, certainly no activity on 6 metres, and basically it would be terrible, terrible news for HF. So are the doomsayers right, or are they totally, totally wrong? Well, only time will tell. There are other reports that said that this cycle, cycle 24, will be one of the best on record. So it's really a case of just waiting and seeing to see what goes on. So that's what I said about good news and bad news. Now, better news, perhaps, is that we're now entering the sporadic E season. So 10 metres and 6 metres will start to open up now for short skip. Now, I've got some details here. Some research that was done by KA5DWI about sporadic E propagation shows that the first openings of the ES season, as it's called, the sporadic E season, usually occur during the last week of April. And there have been reports of some sporadic E as I actually record this podcast, so that's good news. And it says that things really get going in the second week of May, and the season then becomes quite strong for the next 14 weeks. And during the period from about the 23rd of May through to the 5th of June, at least 13 out of 24 hours of each day can have an occurrence of a sporadic EQSO. So we're now going to that point in time when it's actually worth looking at 10 metres and higher to see if there are any openings. Now, the statistics also show that the peak of sporadic E occurred at about 10 o'clock, 9, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock local time, going on till about midday, and then a number of smaller peaks towards the late afternoon. So again, if you're looking for sporadic E openings, statistically, it looks like now is the right time for the next 14 weeks, and your best bet is sort of morning, mid-morning, local time, wherever you happen to be. Now, there's also a lot of talk sometimes about what sporadic E actually is. We know what it is. It's rapid, very, very fast ionization of the E layer. What causes it? Well, that's where the debate starts. Some people talk about wind shear. Some people talk about thunderstorms and sprites and ionization, if you like, spreading upwards from the tops of thunderstorms. I tend to go towards the wind shear theory, if you like, rather than the thunderstorms. There's plenty of evidence that there have been sporadic E openings when there have been no thunderstorm activity whatsoever. So it may contribute to it, but there's nothing to say that all sporadic E is a result of thunderstorm activity. So if you're new to this game, what can you expect? Well, expect to see openings, short skip openings up to sort of 1,000, 1,500 miles. You'll probably find them on 12 metres, 10 metres and 6 metres, occasionally up to 2 metres. I've heard sporadic E on the FM broadcast band last year. Heard that coming along the road. Suddenly heard station coming through from Italy, broadcast station coming through from Italy on about 99 megahertz. Quite rare, but it does happen. And these are going to be very, very short-lived openings. They'll just pop out of the noise and be there for half an hour or so, maybe. Rapid QSB, usually. And will disappear as rapidly as they opened. The sporadic E is sort of characterised by kind of a spotlight effect, if you like. So you'll be able to work a certain part of the world, maybe in a sort of a 1,000-mile radius of where you are, but nothing else. And the other thing you'll notice is the signals will be very, very loud. We're talking S9+ at times. So certainly over the next 14 weeks, get on to 15 metres, 12 metres and 10 metres, and 10 and 20 metres to a lesser extent, really, and just see what you can work in terms of sporadic E on the bands. Anyway, I think that's it for this month's propagation report. I'm Steve Nichols, G0KYA.
Taking a quick look at this week's propagation report reveals that a solar wind stream flowing from a coronal hole is expected to reach Earth on May 5th. The expected planetary A index then for May 3rd through the 11th is 12, 12, 8, 10, 8, 5, 5, 5, and 5 once again. That forecast is from the NOAA, Space Weather Prediction Center, and the U.S. Air Force. For the same period, if we take a look at Geophysical Institute Prague, they're predicting geomagnetic activity of unsettled to active on May 2nd, active on May 3rd, unsettled on the 4th and 6th, quiet to unsettled on the 7th, and back to quiet on May 8th.
Well, I told you this week we had a bunch of stuff to cover and probably going to go a little long, but I did want to bring to you two stories. First one, and they're both not really pirate radio related, but interesting nonetheless. First one up is also from This Week in Amateur Radio. the Random Access Thought had an interview with an operator on the 45-meter free band. Now, lots of interesting frequencies thrown around and that is being used by other folks. Take a listen. I've cut it down for time. You can listen to the entire interview on This Week in Amateur Radio. And like I said, interesting frequencies being used by other people that, call themselves free banders. Take a listen to this.
Hi Bill, this is from Rick in the United Kingdom there, Luton, Bedfordshire there. Yeah, I'll send you as much information as I can on 45 metre there. Most of the M's in this country do run 45 on occasions, not all the time there, depending on what propagation's like there. But it's a very good band to use. It's a gentleman's band, it's a little bit better than some amateur bands, and in some cases a little bit worse there. You tend to pick up mostly continental stations on it. I've spoken to quite a few American stations on it. I've even spoken to Brazil on it. I've even done Indonesia on 45. It depends on condition there, it really does. Most of the stateside stations would come in on 45, come from the West Coast. The band stems from 6.500. Right the way to 6.685. Now you don't want to go under that frequency and you don't want to go over the top frequency there. You get in trouble with sort of, I think in your country, the CAA, Civil Aviation Authority there. That's the people who actually own that part of the bend. Now the part which we're talking about from 6500 there to 6.6850 is still used by the CAA, but anyway, the when they run on that frequency, when they want to use it, you will know about it for sure there. You usually get an operator come on the side first of all and he'll say to you, could you please move off this frequency, we wish to use it, or could you please QSY somewhere else, we're going to use the band. But the calling frequency on 45 meters for the United Kingdom and most of Europe there, there's two of them. There's 6.660. That's the European side of it, mainly French, Italian stations. The one used in the UK is 6.700. The best one, if you want to have a bit of fun on 45 and you think you can make the trip over to the UK on it, is give it a shout on 6.700. You'll be amazed at the amount of UK stations that want to have a talk to you on that band there. Now, the amount of power run on the band, I speak all over the UK on it when I'm mobile. I use the band mobile mainly. We tend to find that in the UK, 3 or 4 watts is all what's really necessary. When conditions get a bit noisy, there's a lot of QRNL Vember in there, you might have to go up to about 10 or 15 whiskies. By the way, you do need a good antenna. I don't recommend a vertical on it because, as you probably know, a lot of power is wasted on a vertical. A lot of the signal's going where you don't want it to go there. But what I use on it is a thing called an inverted V. Now, I have two inverted Vs, one which goes northwest and one which goes east-south there. Now, there's a couple of places to DX by for 45 and 11. The best one which I've found, which I haven't used myself, but I do know friends of mine would use it, and that's just under 20 metres. They run about 13.350 right the way to 14 megs. You'll find people in between there. Lots of noise, lots of RTTY in there. But you've just got to basically sort out the rubbish from the good stuff there. Another place to have a look is under 80 metres. In this country, of a night time, we call it the midnight band. There's a lot of them run just under 80, and they're running on the frequency 3.315. That's their midnight frequency in the UK. Might be worth having a listen, see if you can hear anything there. But underneath every amateur frequency, you will find people pirating that part of the band. Most of them do in this country. I've got a few amateur friends who pirate virtually every part of the HF there. I can't name any call signs or anything because I don't want to get anybody into any trouble there. My call sign, by the way, on the amateur bands there is G4L. Probably gives you an idea of how long I've been on the radio there. I'm 49 years of age now, getting on a little bit in age there. And we've worked the band, like I say, for quite a number of years now. We enjoy amateur bands. We enjoy doing a bit of pirating there as well. I think everybody's got a bit of a pirate inside them anyway. Certainly all my mates have anyway, my amateur friends anyway.
In the end, the only way to see if Richard is right is to go there yourself. Remember, the 45-meter gentleman's band goes from 6.5 to 6.685 megahertz. Have a listen and make a call if you dare.
And lastly, the Media Geek talked about NPR's continuing fight against low-power FM stations. Actually, there's a decent story in Ars Technica that Cracker sent me about this topic. And I also blogged about it on my personal blog, Sans Contemplation. This is about 2.5 minutes long. It's from the Media Geek, and this is just how he's summing up his thoughts about NPR, that's National Public Radio, and they're continuing a fight to keep low-power FM stations off the air. Take a listen to the Media Geek.
And indeed, it was this argument that full-power stations, that 1,000-watt and higher stations, serve the public better in public service than low-power stations could, whether they are a college station, a high school station, or a community station. And it's amazing to me to see that this very same line, this very same rationale is still being trotted out here in 2008, nearly 30 years later, when we've seen the pendulum swing from doing away with low power stations to coming back to the recognition that in that process, in the intervening 22 years since low power radio was first done away with. You saw the clear channels, you saw the consolidation of radio dial, and the virtual death of localism. And Matthew Lazar notes that, you know, indeed, NPR coming out against the protection of low power FM stations is a serious issue. He says, because over the last decade, NPR service has expanded from 635 to 800 affiliated stations. And public radio stance in this puts it at odds with practically every media reform group in the country. And it puts a lot of us, I think, a lot of people who are in who consider themselves on the side of media reform and the side of public interest in a funny place, since we probably listen to public radio and have supported public radio in various forms, because a lot of good service, often local service, but not always, is provided. A lot of good programs are on public radio. And here we have NPR still in 2008 lobbying against low-power community radio, sort of accepting the fact that it exists, but saying it should not be protected. And as I argued in my book chapter, which I just mentioned before in the Radio Reader, I still believe that this is because it's not merely a matter of the so-called technical issues, which have been put to sleep. The MITRE report, which was commissioned or required by Congress, commissioned by the FCC, by an engineering group, which is a big Washington insider, not, you know, crusading and not at all outside, said that low-power FM stations, even when moved closer on the dial to other stations, full power stations, don't cause interference. NPR is still hanging on an interference issue, which has been shown to be a red herring time and again.
Well, that's going to wrap up this edition of the Pirates Week. It's been a couple weeks since I've been able to put something out. Actually, I think I put a small version of the show out a couple weeks ago. But it's going to be hit or miss probably for the rest of the summer. I'll probably end up missing one show a month, probably get down. I know I try to do it weekly, but keep trying to remind myself this isn't a job. It's just a hobby. So not going to beat myself up and try to take a couple vacations this summer. So don't be surprised that if I just miss a show, like I said, about once a month, I'll probably be taking the weekend off and doing other things. And actually, the last couple weekends, I've been rebuilding a large hole in the side of my house, but no reason to get into that here. Well, that's it. Once again, thanks for stopping by, and thanks for listening.
Boat Anchor Soft Glow to your MP3 player via the World Wide Web. We meld the oldest and the newest audio technology. Welcome to the Pirates Week.
That's piratesweek.info.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.